So happy you're with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Just wanted to mention that we've got a great event coming up in Lambeau Field on June 22nd. I'll be up there. Joy Cardine will be up there. We are going to have an event where I will be talking with the Green Bay Packers president and CEO Mark Murphy. Also be visiting with the Packers official historian, Cliff Crystal. We've got the daughter of Ray Nitschke is going to be there, among other people. And we're going to have a lot of fun talking about Packers. And we've got a good old-fashioned tailgate party right at Lambeau Field. And that is on June 22nd. It starts at 5:30. Tickets are available. We'd love to have you come. I'm certainly going to enjoy being there. Go to WPR.org/100. So WPR.org/100. Or you can just call. The number is 800-747-7444. 800-747-7444. Love to have you with us. Well, you know, June is dairy month, and the dairy industry, of course, very important to the state of Wisconsin. We're going to take a look at how it's doing with our two guests today. Brian Gould, professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the UW-Madison with UW Extension. And Brian, great to see you. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Larry. And I want to tell you that I'm going to be up at Lambeau. Great job.
All right. I'm glad that Bob Will's with us as well. He owns Cedar Grove Cheese, his master cheesemaker. And I've had a slice or two of Cedar Grove cheese and really enjoyed it. Bob, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both here. You may have some, as you listen to these guys talk, you may have some questions about the dairy industry, or maybe you are in the dairy industry and want to make a comment. I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a photo there or a question there as well. Maybe a photo that says, Wisconsin is our dairy state. Share that with some others as well. Well, Brian, let's go. Let's start first. If you think about an overview of the business of the dairy industry, it's not just the farm. There's a lot of businesses connected with dairying.
Yeah, you used it. Well, when you're talking about a dairy farm, you're talking about a business.
Yeah,
it extends all the way up from getting that corn planted all the way to getting the bottle in the retailer.
Yeah,
so there's so many stages from getting that milk from the farm to the ultimate consumer.
Yeah, and they really, and add them all up, it's a big effect on the economy.
Yes, and I don't know the exact number, but it's the largest agricultural sector, obviously. But because there's so many steps in terms of transforming that raw milk into a finished product, there's a lot of people involved.
Yeah, and we're talking billions here.
Yes, I think it's $5 billion or something, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, but it's it's a lot of money. So it's obviously a very important part of our total business industry. And we compare, you know, we're always in a fight with California, I think, for what is it, the number of the amount of milk produced and so forth.
California produces the most milk in the U.S., but Wisconsin produces the most cheese, and because they have a different utilization of their milk than we do. 80 to 90% of our cheese goes to 80 to 90% of our milk production goes to cheese.
And that turns me to Bob Wills, because you're one of those cheese guys.
Yeah.
How did you get involved? You were an ag economist at one point yourself, and then decided to get into the cheese business.
Well, you know, there's a saying about how those who can't do teach or something. Well, I was the other way around. I wasn't really good at teaching, so I decided I should do something.
Oh my God!
So I was back in 1989. So I've had quite a run at it now. Started our second cheese factory 5 years ago, the Clock Shadow Creamery over in Milwaukee, and so Cedar Grove Cheese this year is celebrating its 140th year in business, and both plants will be having parties at some point during the year.
So. I would really think so. And you, of course, you haven't been there for 100 years.
Some days it feels that way.
How did all this come about? And you, I think you've really reinvigorated that Cedar Grove company, and you've done some great work there.
Well, the whole industry in Wisconsin has changed so much over the 28 years or so that I've been doing this, and it switched from being very much a commodity business to in Wisconsin, one that now has over 300 different varieties of cheeses that we're making. And, you know, we're still making a quarter of the cheese in the country, but a big portion of it now is specialties, and Cedar Grove has been one of the leaders, I think, in making that change happen.
Yeah, I think so. You won a couple of awards now and again, too, for your work.
Yeah, we've been pretty darn fortunate in that respect.
And Brian, that specialty cheese aspect of it, that seems to me to have almost reinvigorated the whole industry.
Yes, it has, because those specialty cheeses plants tend to be smaller plants, plants the size of Bob's. The other point is those are higher value added products.
Yeah.
So that it potentially the producer is going to be getting more for his or her milk.
Well, I look at, I took a look at my refrigerator this morning, and I've got some Munster, and I've got some cheese that's got olives in it, and I've got some peppered Jack kinds of cheese, and I've got, what else did I have? I have some Swiss cheese.
25% of the cheese produced in Wisconsin is specialty cheese. It's absolutely incredible growth.
And even among the traditional cheeses, like, say, your Swiss cheeses, I think people are doing, in the business, are doing more with even those traditional cheeses, are they not?
Yeah, we've done everything from reviving old varieties that had been here and had vanished, and we're bringing them back, and we're replicating or modeling after some of the European styles of cheeses, but we're also just inventing completely new styles of cheese that that no one had ever done anywhere in the world before. So that's it's a really fun business to be in.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have some resources here at the UW with respect to product development that's really helped us as an industry through the years. So we're very fortunate to have the Center for Dairy Research at the UW.
That's played a big role. And you're a master cheesemaker, Bob, and we have a master cheesemaking, how to become a master cheesemaker, an actual program. I don't know if you were in that or not.
It's a designation that's only Wisconsin has. In fact, Wisconsin is the only state that has licensed cheesemakers, and so you have to be in the business for at least a year and a half or so in order to become a licensed cheesemaker, and then you have 10 years of additional experience before you can even enter the Master Cheesemaker program. And it has done so much to increase the skills and raise the bar for cheesemaking in Wisconsin and put us ahead of everyone else in the country.
Yeah, I think that's just an absolutely great program. And I don't know, Brian, do you even know how many people have gone through that? Or maybe Bob knows.
I know the list is getting longer. It's been around since, maybe the mid-90s?
Yeah, it's like about that. We're, I think, a little over 60 now of master cheesemakers, right, which is still a fairly small number compared to the size of the industry.
Yeah, but compared to any other state.
There are none.
There's zero.
Right.
We're ahead 60 to nothing.
Yeah,
so so that's doing pretty good. You can join it too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. And I got Pat on the line. I don't know if I can get him on or not yet. Let's see if I can. No, I have to wait for a second to get him or her on with the question that they have. If you look at the industry itself, Brian, there's certainly some good things, and there's some tough things. There's always problem areas. That, from your point of view, where are our biggest concerns?
Well, our biggest concerns is, I think we have to get a priority list here. There's lots of them. Is the volatility in incomes and prices for dairy products, and we're We've as an industry, we've developed tools to try to maintain that volatility and take charge of it. But that's the real problem, because when you within a 6 month period, you can have a 25-30% reduction in your output price without your input cost changing at all. How do you deal with that type of situation when you don't have any ways to counteract that volatility?
Yeah, that's got to be big. Pat in Richland Center, let's give you a chance to join in. Pat, have you got a quick question here before our news break?
I do have a question. Thank you for putting me on. I was wondering, is there some way that we could get the I'm in the middle of dairy country here. Have the jobs associated with the dairy industry be better paying jobs that would really stimulate our local economy here? Because, like, to milk cows, you know, maybe you could cut a better deal with whoever you're selling the milk to or something. And because that would really, everybody wants economic growth. That would be true economic growth to have better paying jobs that are already here. And they're sustainable jobs, too. So
good points. Brian?
I was going to say that Bob's Cheese Plant is a perfect example of how you do that in terms of producing a unique product that commands a higher price in the marketplace, and that eventually will translate down to the dairy farmer. And that's so product development is key.
Yeah, Bob, you
well, you know, and we have we have an industry where we're in the cheese industry in particular, where we're competing with not only producers in other countries, producers in other states who have lower input costs than we do, and now more and more non-dairy products that seem to be replacing some of the dairy. And so it's always a challenge for us to be able to make top quality products and compete in the marketplace with other places.
And in the dairy industry, getting good labor is a real problem.
Yeah,
and it's a continuing problem.
We'll talk some more about that, the whole labor situation, and certainly take your questions as well as we talk with Brian Gould and Bob Wills. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. The dairy industry in Wisconsin have been linked for a long time. We're talking about what's going on with the business of dairying with our two guests today, Larry Mealer here. In the studio, Brian Gould, professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the UW-Madison and UW Extension. Bob Wills owns Cedar Grove Cheese, and he is a master cheesemaker. Fun talking with them about cheese and the dairy industry as a whole. You may have questions or concerns. I hope you'll maybe just get a question about cheese. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And our caller just before the break had mentioned something about salaries. We'll probably go back to that. I think a lot in terms of the dairy, the actual farm situation. Depending on the size of the farm, I know quite a few farmers who offer health care. And Brian, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, again, the getting good farm labor to milk those cows twice or three times a day is a real challenge. And one of the ways you get good workers is to offer them higher wages and benefits. And we're starting to see that happen. Obviously, the big uncertainty is where we go with immigration reform. And the dairy industry is very concerned about that. If there's a real draconian closing of the borders, that could be a real issue that could affect supply.
I would think it actually could affect supply. And maybe before we go back to the phones, the 2018 Farm Bill is being worked on by Congress right now, Brian. And you know the scope of the Farm Bill. You think about farms when you think about the Farm Bill, but the scope of that bill is considerably broad.
It is real interesting, and it's very broad. But if you look at the distribution of the funds associated of USDA, that comes out of that Farm Bill, 80% of that is for food stamps, and a lot of general public isn't aware of that. And the recent proposal from the president is to have a major reduction in USDA's budget, but a majority of that impact will be proposed to be on the food stamp, or what they call SNAP program now. And I don't think there'll be much of a right now, it doesn't seem to be a signal of much of a change in what's going on in terms of dairy policy, but there could be some significant movements in terms of the food stamp program.
Let's we can talk some more about that, but let's take a call from Greg in Trempealeau next. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, I bought a cheese before, and it was called Christmas cheese, but it was like an aged cheddar. Is that a specialty cheese or just a label? Do you know anything about that?
All right. Well, got to go to Bob Wills for that one. Bob, what's up there?
Well, I've never heard of it specifically referred to as Christmas cheese, but one of the things that is often done is to take June cheese, cheese that's made in June, put it in a daisy style and wax that and age it out.
Sort of a round style you're talking about.
Yeah, so it'll be like a 22-pound cheese or something, a wheel of cheese, and with a frequently with a red wax coating on it. And at Christmas time, that cheese is aged to have a really nice flavor. And it takes advantage of the wonderful quality of milk that we get off of, especially farms that are where their cows are out grazing in the grass at this time of year.
So, Greg, does that help you out?
Yeah, well, the one I bought had some chives in it. It was more of it was delicious, but I assumed it was sort of a specialty over the holidays that you aged it and then you brought it out for special events.
Yeah. And that's probably a marketing tool, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah, we have a lot of cheeses that have greater demand at particular times of year, and I probably the chives in that give it that green color, which would be nice for the holidays. We also make a cheese, Quark cheese, which is a European style cream cheese. That's used in Käsekuchen, which is a cheesecake that's often eaten around the holidays. So there are a lot of those kinds of projects that we're all engaged in.
I won't ask you to spell it, Bob.
Say it again, though.
Käsekuchen. It's a or is that or the quark? Which one do you want to spell? The quark is Quark.
There we go. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. So, just take a look at Cedar Grove cheese for a minute now. There's a specialty cheese and. And how many cheeses do you produce in the course of a types of cheeses, I should say, I guess?
Yeah, that's one of those questions I should probably know the answer to. the tough part is, you start off with a discrete group of cheeses, so which would be like Cheddar Farmers, Colby Jack, Munster, Havarti, and we have, probably 15 of those, and then we have then we make them with sheep milk cheese and goat with sheep milk and goat milk and water buffalo milk in addition to cow milk and mixed milk cheeses, and then we make a reduced fat version of them, and then we add in chipotle or chives or a dozen different flavor combinations, and so N is large, as they used to say when I was an economist.
Well, Todd from Appleton called in to say he believes there's too much production, and this is causing multiple problems with the dairy industry. And I'm sure he's talking about milk production. Brian, comment on that?
Well, that's a good point. And the wording of too much is a relative term, and relative to our production capacity or the ability to transform that milk into a storable commodity is we're reaching the point where we are not going to be able to accommodate all the milk. And we've had a recent incident. It was a specialty market, ultra-filtered milk, not a lot of product that goes into that, but we lost that market. We didn't have anybody could take that extra milk that was available. And I think that's could be a sign of things to come. And we are doing some reinvestment in the industry in terms of production capacity. But if you look at the production numbers for Wisconsin, I've done this where you plot it from 1945 or 49 to the present, and the number of pounds per cow, it's almost a 45-degree line with no dips, no negative portions of that trend. It's absolutely amazing, and there's no sign of that productivity going down or plateauing even.
And you just thinking about the number of I had to give a talk here a while back, and I was doing the talk about when I started in broadcasting and up to the present, and I thought, I'm going to look back and just see how many dairy farms and farms in general there were in Wisconsin when I started and how many there are today. And there's almost
a tenth, I would say.
Yeah, it's about how many
14,000.
About 14,000.
Right.
Yeah, and it was like a million something.
The outstanding thing to recognize there is that even though our number of farms are going down, the number of cows is relatively flat. That is relatively constant. But our production is going up because of the productivity at the farm level. Farmers are getting better at getting the most out of their feed. Genetics is really improving the herd. And as we transition cows out of a herd, we're going to replace them with younger, more productive cows, both from an age perspective as well as genetics. And like I said, doesn't seem to be a peak yet in terms of the per cow productivity. So we can continue to meet our demand and with fewer numbers of farms and fewer number of cows.
Yeah.
I think also that it's hard to separate the volatility issue that we had talked about earlier from whether there's too much. And, that if there was less milk now, there would be less milk in the times when things when we're exporting a lot of cheese and when things are tight, and it would really push the price of dairy products up higher than a lot of consumers would like to pay. So it's easy to agree that in general that we should have less so that farmers are making more. But the hard questions are, what do we do with the consumers who can't afford to pay that much more, and what do we and who are the people who are going to be asked to not produce as much? And we don't have a lot of volunteers in the industry who say, yeah, I'll be the guy who cuts my production.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned exports and NAFTA and so forth. I'm wondering how does this all affect dairy exports, Brian?
Mexico represents our largest export market for our dairy manufactured dairy products. Canada, 3 or 4, depending upon the year. So the dairy industry is very concerned about any dramatic changes in the relationship with respect to dairy products and those two markets. Very, very important markets. If we were to somehow lose those markets, what has to happen? Those products have to stay within our boundaries, and it's going to put a downward pressure on our domestic prices. So we're very, very concerned as an industry that, personally, I think we've got a very good arrangement with respect to exporting of dairy products. I just hope that we don't have any real structural change to that relationship.
Yeah, and from your perspective, Bob, you're not in the export or business in terms of your cheeses, are you?
No, we have an occasional emergency call from somewhere overseas that somebody wants to have a UPS package sent to them. But other than that, we're not really in the export business.
Yeah, well, several callers online. Let's go to Michael in Stevens Point. Michael, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, just a question about cholesterol. I'm an older guy, and doctor says I've got to watch my cholesterol intake. I love cheese, and I have found that Cedar Grove has some wonderful goat and sheep milk cheeses, and the cholesterol seems in general to be lower with those types of milk. And I was wondering in general if you could just talk a little bit about cholesterol and if there are any specialty products out there for guys like myself who love cheese but need to watch their cholesterol intake.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cholesterol relationship with between the cholesterol in the product and the cholesterol in humans is a complicated one, and I think it probably, you know, it's probably something that doctors have made assumptions about that, and maybe should study further. There's a lot of evidence out there that the dairy products can contribute to weight loss and don't contribute to higher cholesterol. And part of that, I think, is because the composition of milk is such that it's that there are antioxidants and there are minerals and vitamins and parts of the proteins and things that are offsetting impacts, and that it's really a very well balanced and complex product, and one that I think makes it difficult for the fake milks to replicate because they're focused on a few attributes rather than all the complexity that we find in milk.
Thanks, Michael, for calling. Ray and Rhinelander, will give you a chance. Ray, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Does your guest know anything in reference to the percentages of organic milk products versus non-organic? As people well know, the southwestern part of Wisconsin with crop and all the organics that are going on with the local production of milk products, et cetera. What effect do you think that's going to have on, once again, on organic versus non-organic, and what do you know about it? And I'll listen to it off the air.
Thanks. All right. Thanks for calling. That's another one of those things when the consumer goes to the grocery store.
The issue with organics is the time it takes. Well, there's a couple of issues, obviously. One is the time it takes to convert from conventional to an organic system. It's multiple years, and a farmer is getting reduced output from his cows because he's using less concentrates and more traditional feed sources. But they're getting less milk, but they're not getting the organic price. You can't get the organic price until your milk is certified as being organic. So it takes, you're going to have a couple of years where you're going to be under extreme cash flow issues in terms of the amount of price you're getting for your milk, even though you're transitioning to that organic. So that's one problem, and obviously the other problem is the processing capacity for organics. Again, maybe Bob can talk a little bit about more how plants have to separate their conventional milk versus organic milk. Again, I'm not quite sure what that
entails.
Requires.
Yeah, Bob, coming.
Well, last year was Cedar Grove cheese. About between 60% and 70% of our production was organic cheese. And so, and I think overall in the country now that organics are reaching somewhere close to 5% of the total marketplace. There are areas like Southwest Wisconsin which are particularly good for organics because they're areas where the large cropping systems are not very easy because mm-hmm. of the hilliness, and yet you can put your cattle out on pasture, which is one of the requirements of the organic industry. And but the ebb and flow in the organic industry seems to have a lot to do with the conventional milk price still, and that when the milk price gets low, we get a lot of people wanting to shift into organics, and then we end up sometimes with a glut of organic milk relative to the demand that's out there at the moment.
Very interesting. Thanks for that question. I appreciate it very much. Joan in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. I'm not a native Wisconsinite, but I've been living here for a couple of decades, and I've always been able to buy my butter from Ireland. My family's from Ireland, which, of course, all the products are coming from them, dairy products, are organic, since Ireland does not allow the pesticides and herbicides that the United States does. But I'm just wondering, how does Wisconsin get around free trade when we can't even buy a product that isn't made in Wisconsin? Like I said, I used to get it at Sam's Club. I went to Aldi's, and they had to pull it all. Jill had said that this was something that had been in existence for quite a while, but it was just being enforced again. But how does Wisconsin get around
How do we get around that? So we're talking about Irish butter bans here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for us to talk a little bit about the history of dairy in Wisconsin, which was that when we started doing dairy in the late 1800s and maybe into the early 1900s, we were known for our horrible quality of products, and we were stretching the adding oils and doing things to stretch the cheese and so a lot of the rules that developed in Wisconsin were developed in order for us to overcome our bad reputation, which we've successfully done. So we have a grading system in Wisconsin for cheese and butter. There was Irish butter after Kerry would just have to have their butter graded, which would be fairly easy for them to do, and they would be able to sell it, but they have an objection to that. They also, another company in the state brought in Irish butter and called it Irish Gold, and Kerry immediately sued them to prevent them from selling it, even though it was Irish butter that was graded and available in the stores here. So it's no longer available because of the competition from Kerry. So it's a really very complicated kind of
issue. Bob said, there's a requirement that the butter has to have a grade on the label in order to be sold retail, and that's not happening when you're importing it. And like you said, you just have to repackage it, get it graded, and repackage it in Wisconsin, and the problem solved. But for some reason, the Irish cheesemaker or buttermakers did not care to do that.
They didn't want to grade. Why wouldn't they want to grade?
I think they're just objecting to the rule, and so they're making an issue of it.
Yeah.
And
the U.S. is such a small share of their market, I think, that they're willing to take that chance.
Okay. There we go. That's why, Joan, thank you so much for calling. And Beth in Caledonia, Minnesota. We'll go to you. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I just have a quick comment. My grandfather went through the dairy program at UW-Madison, became a cheesemaker. My dad went through the program, and he was the youngest in his class. I think he was 18 years old when he went to Madison. Neither my grandfather or my dad were a master cheesemaker or got that class, but my dad made very good cheese.
Yeah?
Well, you know, I can say I learned from my father-in-law, and I learned from another cheesemaker who worked for 52 or 54 years at our cheese factory, Dan Hetzel, and I may have the credential as a master cheesemaker, but both of them were much better cheesemakers than I am. I may know the science a little more than they knew, but they were the artists, and I certainly know how that works.
So there are a lot of, in other words, what you're saying, Bob, is that there are some people out there who are pretty darn good at making cheese that don't have that master label.
Absolutely. There's an art and a skill and an art and a science in cheese making, and I think we all strive for that art, and some of us are better at it than others. But the Master Cheesemaker program, it evaluates our products. We have to reach a standard on them, but we also have to be the people who can work our way through the science of it, and not everybody is anxious to do that side of it.
Yeah,
and again, with the licensing requirements in Wisconsin, that is clearly made for better cheesemakers. So you don't have to be a master cheesemaker. I think it's great that we have that program. It even excels it even further. But if you're a licensed cheesemaker in Wisconsin, that says something.
Well, and you know what, Wisconsin.
And we're almost out of time, by the way, here. We got about 10 seconds.
I'll save it.
Save it for the next time, Bob. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you both so much for being with us today. We'll have them back, and we'll do it again. Bob Wills owns Cedar Grove Cheese, Master Cheesemaker. Brian Gould, professor in the Department of Ag and Applied Economics and UW Extension. Great to have them along. And tell you what, we'll do this again. We'll have them back, and we'll talk again some more about cheese and the dairy industry. And you know what? In the meantime, there's lots more in store here this afternoon, so you stay with us right here on the Ideas Network.